So we ask Bhagavan, Bhagavan Krishna, give us Gita in a nutshell. You know, we want the bottom line. I don't have time to read all 700 verses and 18 chapters. Can you summarize it for us in a nutshell? So for nuts like us, Bhagavan has summarized. We are almost to the end of the 18th chapter. And there are a couple of verses which we have done in the last couple of weeks, which kind of give the essence of it. He says, Man mana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. So Krishna says, put your mind in me, become devoted to me, worship me alone. When what he means by me alone, we will talk about that, and bow down to me, prostrate to me, and you will reach me. That is my promise, because you are dear to me, Arjuna. And then Arjuna says, where should I find you, Bhagavan? You know, they say you are somewhere in Vaikuntha, or maybe you are in the temple. I don't have time to go to the temple. So he says, Ishvara sarva bhutana hriddesherjuna tishthati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. He says, Ishvara, the Lord is in your own heart. You don't have to go far to look for him. He is in your heart and he is making you walk, talk, listen, hear, just as a motor makes a machine go. There's a huge machine, but in the middle there is a motor which operates. So Bhagavan is like that motor which operates your body, your mind, your intellect. So if you look for me, you will find me right in your heart. And then he says, what exactly should I do? How can I reach you? How can I know you? What should be my relationship to you? So give us that. And so today we'll do one of the most famous verses, probably the most popular verse in throughout the world, from the Bhagavad Gita. It's chapter 18, verse 66. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tva sarva papebhyah mokshayishyami mashuchah. Let's all chant together. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tva sarva papebhyah mokshayishyami mashuchah. So this is a very famous verse, and most Indian homes you'll find that there'll be a poster about of the Bhagavad Gita and this verse. So this is a very important verse which kind of makes it very clear what should be my relationship with God. So sarva dharman, so sarva dharman means all dharmas, parityajya, give up all dharmas, tyajya means give up, pari means totally give up all dharmas, mam ekam, me alone, sharanam vraja, come to me alone, come to my refuge, sharanam, refuge, vraja, go. Aham tva, and why should I do that? What, you know, we are always profit motivated. Okay, if I, Bhagavan, if I come to you, if I surrender, if I prostrate, then what will I get? See, we think, if I don't get anything, I'm not going to waste my time. So Bhagavan says, aham tva sarva papibhya. Aha, I, for you, I will free you from all sins. Papa means sins, all sins. Moksha, I will give you freedom from all sins. Moksha ishyami is the future tense. I will free you from all sins. Ma shucha, don't worry. You have nothing to worry. So now it starts with Krishna says, what is dharma? And when we look at the translation of the word dharma, actually if you open a Sanskrit to English dictionary, you will find two or three pages of meanings of dharma. It's not one line or one word or one paragraph. Dharma, it goes on and on and on, on and on and on. And then at the end of the third page, they will put etc., etc., etc. Means the meaning of dharma is so vast that it is almost impossible to summarize. In fact, there is not one word in the English language cannot summarize. You cannot say, okay, what is the English translation of dharma? Sorry, we don't have that. But what I have done is picked some of the important meanings of the word dharma, which is above this line. And some of these meanings kind of convey what dharma is. So the simplest meaning of dharma is religion. You know, they say Hindu dharma, Islam dharma, Isai dharma. So the Hindu faith or the Christian faith. Come in the front. Come sit here. No, come. You're okay. No, come. So the simplest meaning is dharma means the religion. So like Hindu religion, Muslim religion, you know, Sikh religion, Christianity. So that is one meaning of dharma. The other meaning is duty. Ye mera dharma hai. You know, this is my duty. I have to do it. Another meaning of dharma is my station in life. Like if you are a youth, they say, you know, what is your duty as a student? Or as a grahastha, as a householder, what is my duty? As a vanaprastha dharma, what is my duty when I am retired? Sannyas dharma, what is the duty of people who have given up the world? So, depending on my station, if I am a student, this is my duty. If I am a householder, that is also called dharma. Then, dharma also belongs to the different parts of my body. See, I have body, mind, and intellect. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. And that's all decided by my vasanas or my tendencies. And at the top we have Om, that is God's presence in us. You can call it Krishna or Jesus or Buddha, but it is God's presence in us. So what is the dharma of my body? My body perceives objects. I see things. I hear things. I smell, taste, touch. I walk, talk. What is the dharma of the mind is to feel emotions. And the dharma of the intellect is to think the thoughts. So that is the dharma of the PFT. Then dharma is also translated as righteousness, morality, doing the right thing. That's why Jesus says, you know, follow me in the path of love. We say, why should we follow? Because if you don't follow, you will fall low. So that's the message. You know, if you don't follow the scriptures, you will fall low. But the most important meaning, which Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says, the meaning of dharma is it is the law of being the very essence of who I am. So when Krishna says, give up all dharmas and come to me, people say, wait a minute. Some one lady asked me, so is Krishna saying, give up worshipping Shiva, Mother Goddess, and give up Christianity, Islam, and come to me? Is that what he's meaning? Is he trying to change everybody? No. When he says, give up all other ideas and come to me, when he says me, he says it is the essence or the Lord or the substratum of the whole universe, like Jesus says. You know, one who follows me can only reach the Father in heaven. So when they say me, they're not representing me, that human body of Krishna or human body of Christ or Buddha. It is the essence, the substratum. And one who does not follow the principles that were preached by Jesus or by Krishna or by Buddha will never reach heaven, will suffer in hell. You know, will not reach. To reach the highest, you have to follow the rules that are given in the scriptures. So that is what they mean by give up all other pursuits. Because in life, we find that everybody is busy chasing pursuits. With my body, I want to get as much comfort as I want, as much wealth. With the mind, I must have so many friends and relations and love. And I must have, you know, knowledge and my ideas. And aage aajo, come in the front. And my ideas should be accepted by others. So throughout our life, we are chasing things of the body, of the world, objects, emotions, and thoughts. And that's what our pursuit is. And we don't have time to seek Om, the Lord, Krishna, who is in our heart. We don't have time for Him. I'm too busy. I'm so busy. I have so much. He said, you know, get up in the morning and pray for a while or meditate. No. I'm so busy. Out of 24 hours, we don't have time, even 20 minutes, to give to the one who gave us everything, who created us. And we say, I'm so busy. You don't know my schedule. But we have time for everything else. As we said, if somebody calls us on the phone, we have no problem talking half an hour, you know, nonsense things, which is nothing even related, important. Or on the internet, or we are Facebook. You know, that's my pet complaint. I mean, people put all kind, and we go through everyone, and I like this. And my God, how much time we waste on this. But for following religion or knowing, listening to God or thinking about God or studying the Gita, we don't have time. Then dharma is also translated as I said, station in life. Whatever my duty is in my station, as a child, a young man, I have to study. As a householder, it's my duty to take care of my children, my older parents. Then we have to support, you know, charitable activities in the society. I have to do that. And then as I get older and as I am retired or retiring or retired, then I have to slowly withdraw and stop interfering in the world, stop interfering in children and grandchildren, let them run their life. I have to prepare myself for the next life, for the next world. So that is called dharma of station. But one of the important meanings of dharma is righteousness. Righteousness means morality, doing the right thing. And it may not necessarily be the law. Like say there is a law, right? Okay, I'm supposed to drive 55 and I drive 70. I'll get a ticket, I'll be punished for that. But if I have promised somebody something, you know, I'll come and help you. Now, that's a moral commitment. Now, for that, if I don't do it, then no law of the land will punish me, but the law of the Lord will. If I do something that is immoral, that is unethical, even though I may not be caught, I may not be punished by the law, but there is a higher law which keeps track of all my activities. And so regardless of whether I get caught or not, so there are things that are illegal and there are things that are immoral. So dharma represents morality, doing the right thing for myself, doing the right thing for others, and ultimately for society. But the most important meaning of dharma, which Swami Chinmayanandaji in his commentary also quotes, he says, it is the law of being, the essence of who I am. Now, who I am, there's an external component and an internal component. The external component is what we can see, like whether I'm a man or a woman, I'm young or old, short or tall, black or white. So those are external. Now, those are changing. You know, I mean, you know, the body changes as we get older, the mind changes, the thoughts change, the concepts change. You say, well, the sex doesn't change, but nowadays that too. You know, Bruce Jenner, the famous athlete, became Caitlyn Jenner. Now, I mean, so that's not my final being. So what is the final being? What is the essence? It is Om, represented by Om, and that is God's presence in me that is permanent, that never changes. Whether I'm a child or whether I'm a youth or whether I'm middle age, old age, and even if after I'm gone, that consciousness, that Lord, that Brahman remains unaffected. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna in the second chapter, he says, what you are is that essence, that soul, the immortal. Fire cannot burn it, weapons cannot cut it, water cannot wet it. So the point is that nothing in this world can destroy that essence. And that is what I really am. And there is an external, which is what people can see. my sex, my height, my weight, my appearance. But what I really am is the essence, and that is called the law of being or the essence. And to give an example, like sugar. Now people think sugar, sugar comes in many forms, right? You can buy it in cubes. You can buy it in granules. You can buy it in powder. You can even buy sugar in, like this, what do you call this? These big pieces, what do they call? Crystals, like that mishri, what they call, So you can buy sugar in many forms, brown sugar, white sugar. But what is the essential nature of sugar is sweetness. If it is not sweet, it is not sugar. The shape is not important. The form is not important. The color is not important. But the essence of sugar is sweetness. Like, for example, in India, there is something called alum patkadi. If you remember that, our parents used to use that to, like an antiseptic. And that looks exactly like sugar, like crystal sugar. But when you bite it, it tastes bitter. So even though it looks like sugar, has all the appearance of sugar, since it doesn't have sweetness, it is not sugar. So similarly, the essence of me is not this body. This body will change and I will drop it, not the mind with which I feel emotions, not the intellect, not even my vasanas or my tendencies. Those also change. Like there was a certain time when we liked sports and then you outgrow it. You were playing all day when we were youth. And then after a while you lose interest. Or like a kid loves to ride his bike, but then the day he gets his car, the bike is lying in the garage, not used. So what does not change is the essence. So the word dharma represents the essential nature of me. And that, he says, everything else you can give up. You might give up your, other duties. Why? Because he says, do not spend too much time in pursuing the sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Come to me alone, because make me your important goal in life. And again, by me, for a Krishna devotee, it will be Krishna. For a Shiva devotee, it will be Shiva. For a Christian, it will be Jesus. For a Buddhist, it will be Buddha. So that Lord who is everywhere and who is in my heart, make that your primary goal. So, mam ekam sharanam raja, give up everything else and make me. So he says, does that mean I have to stop working? Okay, goodbye mommy and daddy, I'll put you in a nursing home, because Krishna said, come to me. No, I don't have to take care of my children. No, what Krishna is saying, that when he says me, he means me that is in the heart of all beings. So me, that is Krishna, is not only there in me, but it is there in my parents, in my children, in my neighbor, even in my brother-in-law. Or for a lady, my sas, she is there too. Don't forget that. So remembering God in all beings and taking care of everybody as God, treating everybody as God, dealing with people as God, because God is the essential nature of all of us. So not only I am divine, but everybody is divine. So doing all your duties, all your stations in life as a service of God. So whatever job I am doing, wherever I am, whether I'm a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or a teacher, doing all my activities dedicated to the Lord, following morality and never forgetting the law of being, the essence, because the goal of all scriptures is to go inward and discover. When they say he is a self-realized master, whether you look at Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmaya Nanda or Mahamati Prannath or whoever these great souls and prophets were, they all said, find me in your heart. Pehle aap pehchano re sadho, pehle aap pehchano. So where do you find Bhagwan? Find him in your heart, because you are that. Every one of us is an expression of that divinity. So recognize that when you work in the world. And then he says, mam ekam sharanam vraja, surrender to me alone. Now when we mean surrender, what exactly do we mean by the word surrender? So the word surrender is shown very well in the case of a river. Now, what does she do? She's born in the Himalayas, up in the mountains, Ganga River, and then it goes through the plains. But its goal is what? The Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal. So it merges into the ocean and its purpose is served. So for a human being, when we talk about surrender, it is to merge, to become one with that. Merge does not mean that I stop living anymore. These great prophets or saints that we mentioned did not stop living, but they became one with God. And you could see in them an expression of that divinity. If you want to see God, all you have to do is look at the face of these saints or prophets, the teachers, because they have become one with Him. They have become one with that Lord. So they merge totally into that divinity. And then their life becomes an expression of God. So what they say is, make yourself empty and let God work through you. Because Krishna is always shown with the flute, you know, and the flute has 8 holes. The flute is empty, but when Krishna puts His breath through that flute, from those 8 holes, beautiful music comes out. So in our case, the 8 holes are the 5 organs of action, the hands, feet, speech, and all that, the mind, intellect, and ego. So when my 8 faculties become empty, that means, oh Lord, you alone are working through me. And when you do that, then you become an instrument of God. But if you say, like if the flute starts playing its own music, nowadays we have, you know, if you go to many places, you'll find this piano playing its own music and it's programmed, then does not need to be a flute player or a pianist or a violinist, but if you really want to enjoy the music, that instrument has to become an instrument of the Lord. Let the Lord function through me. So that's what they say. Make yourself empty and say, God, you do whatever you want with me. I am yours. So that is called surrender. That is called giving up. Because when we talk about surrender, we always say, what should I give to the Lord? And what we do is pluck a flower from the garden, which was created by God, and then we go and offer it to the temple, and we say, I offered up. It's good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with offering a flower to God. That's very good. But to think that I have done something special, or I say, you know, I gave so much donation. Now, that's very good too. But whatever you can give, everything the Lord has given you, your money, your house, your children, your ability to work, everything is a gift from the God. So what do I have that God doesn't have? You know, what does God want from me? I have it, but He doesn't have. And what is that? Ego. Ego, I have plenty. You know, I have enough ego, enough arrogance, enough pride. That is what He wants us to surrender. Because I and my, I. So like somebody, student went to the teacher, he says, I want to be happy. I want to be happy. So the teacher says, do 2 things. Give up I and give up want. Then you will be happy.
No.
See? Because I, the ego, as long as that is there, you will never be happy. I wanted to do this, but I couldn't do this. And also wanting, desire, I want this, I want that. And there is no end to man's desires, no end to man's wanting. So give up the wanting, and then you will be happy. Just be happy, because that's what even, you know, they say, don't worry, be happy. So the worrying comes from either ego, I wanted to do it and couldn't do it, or want. So that is what the essence of what Lord wants us is, to give up our ego, give up our selfishness, become His instrument in the world. But what we do is we make deals with God. You know, we are very good at making deals. And so we'll say, God, if I give you this, what will I get? You know, if I surrender my ego, what will I get? Kya milega mujhe? So that is always we want to ask. So God says, suppose I make a deal with you. You know, say, okay, I'll give you wealth, but you give me the health. They said, no, I don't want that. I'll give you $1 million, but give me both your hands. No, not like that. My husband you can take. That I am ready to deal. I said, no, you have to give something that is yours, something that I love. So what will I get when we make this kind of deal? So they say that aham tva sarva pape bhyah, once you come to me, I will release you from all sins. Now, what are sins? Sins are these vasanas, these tendencies. So when I have selfish tendencies, when I have, like they say, I'm an angry person. You know, I was born with anger, or I'm very jealous, or I'm very selfish, or I'm... So these are the long, hidden, unmanifest tendencies which I was born with. And once these tendencies come out as desires in the intellect, I have to have it. Then it becomes a thought in the mind and an action at the body level. Like a person wants to drink. He has an alcoholic tendency. So then he gets a thought, okay, it's 5 o'clock in the evening. I haven't had any drink today. So that becomes a thought, and then it becomes an action. Then he goes to the store to buy it. And it could be a strong desire for anything. It could be a strong desire for money, or a strong desire to get somebody. You know, I want to marry her. Without her, my life is incomplete. So these tendencies, what they do, if they are good, see, they say there are two kind of vasanas in the Yoga Vasishtha I was reading. He says there are two kinds of vasanas. One is the noble vasanas, and the other ones are the ignoble or the selfish vasanas. So first of all, the negative tendencies must be given up. All scriptures say that, give up anger, greed, jealousy, kam, krodh, lobh, moh, mad, matsarya. So give up all these negative tendencies and encourage your spiritual vasanas, a desire to be good, a desire to share, a desire to be unselfish, a desire to help the world, desire to pray, desire to reach God, desire to meditate. So those should be encouraged. So encourage your spiritual side, because we have two tendencies. One is good and one is bad. There are always these two. That's why Mahabharata happened, of course, thousands of years ago, but is happening in us constantly. There is a constant battle between good and evil, and it is up to us who wins. And they say, if you have Lord on your side, you will win. That's what happened in the Mahabharata. The Pandavas had, Arjun had Krishna with him. So if you have Lord with you, you will win. So the negative tendency should be stopped and the positive should be encouraged. But eventually, all desires, all vasanas have to end. You say, even the good? Yes. Because a desire means it comes out of incompleteness. But for a saint, he does not work with a desire to help the world or a desire to serve. His life becomes an expression of love automatically. For him, it's not even an effort, it's not even desire, but an outpouring of love for humanity. So that's why even the desire to serve can also become an obstacle. Like I say, I want to do service in this organization, but this guy, he doesn't let me. So there also, even in religious organizations, there is politics and there is, groups, and then one group is more powerful, and who wants to be president, and who wants. So why? Because even there, the human tendencies are not there. So what one should say, look, I am here to serve. It doesn't matter whether I have a position or not, doesn't matter whether anybody appreciates or not. My life will be a life of service. So that's what Krishna says, that when you approach me, when you come to me, I will slowly dissolve your vasanas. See, first we have to reduce our vasanas to reach the Lord. But ultimately, when we sit in meditation, or when we are sitting with prayer and surrendering, then he comes to our help and dissolves our vasanas, our negative tendencies. So it's like a partnership. I do my job, and then Lord says, then I take you up in my... So as you approach him, the more you go, the more the attraction is. It's like a magnet. if you're far away, you don't feel the magnetism, but as you get closer and closer, the power of the magnet becomes stronger and stronger. And once you come close, then you become one with that magnet. It's like an iron piece. So same way, Bhagwan is like that. He will draw us to him. And he says, you come to me, and then it is my job to take care of you. That's why in the 12th chapter, he says, Tesham aham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha maya veshit chetasam. He says, once you put your mind in me, then it is my responsibility to pull you out of this ocean of samsara. So that is the, he says, aham tva sarva papebhya moksha ishyami. I shall free you, ma shucha, don't worry. He says, what do you mean, don't worry, Bhagwan? You know my life, I am a sinner. I have done so many bad things. If I start listing them, it will fill up several books. I don't think I can come to you. You don't know my life. You know, Bhagavan says, I know you, I have been with you. I was in your heart from the beginning. No, but I am a sinner. See, people have this idea, I am a born sinner. Bhagavan says, nobody is a sinner. All of you have me in your heart. If you have God in you, how can you be a sinner? You are all divine creatures. You are all my children. That's what he says. All you have to do is come to me. Don't worry. Then I take responsibilities for your actions. He said, but how about my sins? He says, I will forgive them. The same thing in Christianity. They have this, you know, when you go for confession, and then if you're truly sincere, then they say your sins will be forgiven. And that does not mean that you go and then come out and commit more sins. So you have been, like for us, if we go and take a bath in the Ganga, they say, all your sins are forgiven. They say, very good, now I can start a new book. No, the idea is not to repeat. So he says, you will be forgiven and I will purify you. And that's very clear. If you go to sit in a temple or a church, how peaceful you feel, how your heart becomes so pure. And when you're sitting there, you're getting so much positive energy, so much love, and you come out, you feel so good. But unfortunately, it doesn't stay with us. So that's why they say constant remembrance of the Lord, either, you know, constantly chanting his name, constantly remembering God. You know, that's why they say maybe carry his picture with you in your wallet. Or so constantly remembering the Lord. You know, maybe keep a picture in your car or on your desk or in and have a picture in your kitchen. So when you are cooking or when you are working or when you are driving or, you know, when even at work. So having some kind of reminder reminds you that, okay, God is with me at all times. So the moment you do that, your mind becomes peaceful. Your mind, because you just chant in the name. Shri Krishna, Sharnam Mama, Om Namah Shivaya, the name of the Father and the Son. And immediately your mind becomes pure, your mind becomes holy. So the more you chant his name, the more you can purify. So another beautiful thing I got from Swami Chinmayananda, he says, give God your power of attorney. You know, that's such a beautiful concept. Because, in you know, like, suppose you have a very difficult deal, like real estate deal, and there's so much work to be done. You say, I don't have time for all that. So you find an agent and you say, okay, look, you have my power of attorney. You can sign all papers for this particular deal. So then after that, you don't have to worry. You know, he'll go to the court, get all the papers, he'll fill them out, and then he will submit them to the registrar. And then if there's anything incomplete, he'll take a fee for that. But then you have not worried about it. You say, at the end of it, when the deal is finished, you come and talk to me, I'll give you your commission. So similarly, you say, Bhagwan, I have given you my power of attorney. You do whatever you want. I am no longer in charge of my life. My mind and intellect, I've given the power of attorney to you. So you take charge of my mind and intellect. It is your job to purify. It is your job to... So what that happens is that kind of surrender is not easy. You know, people say, oh, you mean I should just surrender and do nothing? No, to surrender that much, to surrender my ego, to surrender my selfishness is not easy. But if you can really do that, then Bhagavan says, Ma Shucha, then don't worry. I am then responsible for your actions. I take charge of your life. And obviously, when God is in charge of our life, obviously, I won't be doing anything, you know, selfish or hateful or angry or jealous. Automatically, your mind becomes pure. So that is the essence of this verse. He says, give up all your activities, dedicate them to me. By give up, it does not mean you stop working, but the I and my should go away. God alone is everything. Whatever I have is his gift to me, and what I do with what I have is my gift to him. So that activity, when a person does with that attitude, then his every action becomes a prayer, his every action becomes service, and then automatically your anger, greed, jealousy, all your selfish vasanas get reduced. So that is this beautiful verse. There's of course a lot more we can discuss, but is the word dharma clear to everybody? All these meanings.
Dharma, there's two different dharmas. Dharma when we are embodied.
Right.
And there's a dharma when we are...
As the soul, right.
As the soul.
Right.
And the dharmas really are, the dharma when we are embodied are really all of our vasanas.
Right.
Good and bad, all of our tendencies.
Right.
And that is who we are.
Right.
And then when we die, when we are not embodied, then who we are is... So I guess my question is, why aren't there two different words? Because everything so far is so precise, and here it's like, to me, it's clear that the dharma when you're embodied is different.
Right. So it's like the dharma of a student is different from a dharma of a householder.
Right.
It's the same word dharma, but a student's duty is different from a householder's duty, is different from a retired. So it's the same word dharma, but depends on the context. So when they say dharma is the law of essential being, means what I am, that is unchanging. So the body is changing, the mind is changing, the intellect, but the law, the consciousness within me is not changing, and that is who I am. So constantly remembering and approaching that. So dharma is the essence. Just as the dharma of sugar is sweetness, the dharma of fire is heat. You know, sometimes you have these artificial fires which look very nice but don't give you heat. So if there is no heat, it's not fire. If there is no sweetness, it's not sugar. So what is my essential nature is not man or woman, it's not young or old, but I am that divinity. So that is the essence of all the scriptures. You are that. You are divine. So that divinity, God's presence in me, is my dharma, is my essential nature, and that is who I really am, and that is what I have to remember. Yes?
How does one abandon all dharmas?
Abandon means what they are saying, that all duties that I'm doing, slowly reduce them. See, right now, all our energy is spent on accumulating, desiring, possessing. A, as I am working, it should not be me, but it should be him. So when I say abandon, means the Lord is doing everything, number one. And number two, as your wisdom increases, as you get this knowledge, slowly you spend less and less time in the world and more time for God. So slowly you are abandoning your worldly duties, and that's why these sannyasis, these monks, you know, that's why we distinguish them. You know, the priests wear that white habit or sannyasis wear that orange to show that these people have, or the monk or the nuns, you know, they say, I'm married to Jesus. So the idea is that after that, for such a person, there is no worldly responsibility. His or her responsibility is to reach God and spread his message. But for them, but for you and me, because we have not taken sannyas, my every duty should be done as his work. So then I am not doing it. So when we say abandon, we're not saying stop working, but do every activity as his service. And as I am retired, or as I have a lot of us are at age of retirement, then my whole job, day and night, should be to reach God. then there should be nothing else more important than that. You know, children, grandchildren, whatever little you can do, do. But I should not become a, you know, second-hand babysitter. You know, my goal is to reach God. If I can help, fine. But you see, that's what happens to us. Even after retirement, we are so caught up. I mean, the maya of my children and grandchildren, let them live their life. You lived your life. Now you are retired. Let children take care of. I'm not saying that don't be available, but let that not be your main goal in life. My main goal in life is to reach God, to know Him and know Him within. So all my effort should be in that direction, through service, through bhakti, through love, through right knowledge, through reading. So I should be spending some time every day reading the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or whatever my scriptures are. Every day I must read it. Every day. For pranamis, every day read the bani, not only mechanically, but understand it. Read it with understanding. Why am I reading this scripture? That's why we have English translations given to all of you, so that you can understand the Bhagavad Gita, not just mechanically chant it. Other people just mechanically sit down and read. I mean, that's good. Reading is better than, you know, sitting on the internet. But to read with understanding is even better. So I should read every day. I should chant His name. I should do some meditation. I should do some service. So slowly my life should become God's life. I am now, everything is for you. So one has to change the direction. How many lifetimes are you going to just spend in the world? Objects, emotions, thoughts, acquiring, possessing. One more life you'll again give, again come, again in the mother's womb and in a punarapi jananam. Enough ho gaya. Now at least let me, whatever years I have, let me devote them to God. So that is the essence of this verse. So the essential nature is God's presence in me. Yes. You had a question?
I don't understand why one would try to abandon dharma as understood in...
No. That's why he says, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Means come to me who is the essential. Give up all worldly duties and follow the path of morality and come to me. Mam Ekam. So he continues that. When here he's using the word dharma, he's using it as duties, worldly activities. Slowly reduce them and come to me. So we have to read the whole sentence. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam, me alone, sharanam braja. Make me alone your goal. Not, you see, what we have many goals. You know, we have money, children, TV, internet, and then also God. You know, we give God once, I've given you, but one out of 12. He says, I'm not interested in being one out of your 12. You want me, you have to make me number one. Make me only. That way he is very clear. It's like for us also, it's very important. Like you cannot say, I want to study medicine and law and engineering and science and economics. No, you have to pick one and make that your primary goal. You say, I have pre-med major. Going to become a doctor. Or then you don't take any engineering courses or commerce or... That is my goal. Until you do that, you will never become a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer. In the world, we do that. We exclusively pick one. But when it comes to God, we have a hard time. Because we say, God also. See, that also word is, doesn't work. Bhagwan bhi, nahi, wo nahi chalega. Bhagwan hi. God alone. Then and then alone you will reach Him. Then and then alone. You look at these lives of saints. They gave up everything. And that alone was important. You know, and they were ready to sacrifice anything.
Sir, this karma is only this dharma or how they are different? Or how they are
saved? No, karma is my activities which come out of desire. And I do good or bad karmas depending on good or bad desires. And I get good or bad results. So, but karmas that are done unselfishly, dedicated to God, remembering Him and serving Him, those will purify your mind, those will reduce your vasanas. But karmas that are done selfishly, you know, with anger, hatred, jealousy, then those karmas are negative. And so you have like a bank balance. Karmas are like a bank balance. You know, so when you do positive, you are adding to that. And when you do negative, you are taking it away. And if your negative becomes so much, then, you know, then you have a negative balance, and that's how then your next life, you're starting already in a negative. And that's why, you know, then people suffer and they say, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. Why am I suffering? It is because of my karmas of this life and previous lifetimes.
And even the desire to realize is a disturbing thought that can obstruct the final achievement. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, so I think what, did I answer your question about karma? Let me finish, I'm sorry, yeah. Right.
What we are doing at present.
Right, right. Yes. That is one of the meanings of dharmas. So the karma is an expression of my duty. As a duty as a householder, as a housewife, as a mother. So those are the duties you are doing, and that is your dharma at this time. So take care of your family and all, but take it as a service of God. Right. And for, yeah, I think the question you ask is for people who meditate. See, for in meditation, they say you have to quieten your mind and make it free of thoughts. And then in that stillness, you will experience God's presence within. But if at that time you say, I am meditating, and then I'm waiting for God to appear. You know, in this Puranas, they say God appeared as a light. So you are closing your eyes, and then periodically you open one eye. Has God come or not? You know, so then that's what they mean. That even the anxiety to see God should go away, and automatically he will appear in your heart. You will know his presence. So in meditation, even that thought that I have to reach God has to go away. That is the final thought. And that's what Raman Maharishi says. It's like the stick. You use that. Suppose the firewood is not burning, so you use the stick to move it around, and then the firewood picks up. And ultimately that stick also catches fire and gets burned. So this final thought, I have to reach God, even that thought drops. So then you become one with him. Even that final thought, I have to realize, that also has to be dropped. So in meditation, you have basically no thought. You become thoughtless and direct your mind's attention inward to God's presence. That is the dharma. That's why the commentary, mostly he has talked about meditation. I didn't spend too much time on it, but I'm glad you brought it up. But because there's so much other commentary to be given, but that's what he says. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, akashchit dukha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.